It produced a most satisfactory effect. Sapton spun round on his heel, his pipe clattering on the floor. Grundvig sprang up, staring in amazement. The prince, who had been seated at the table, swore in astonishment. There were two others there, behind the prince's chair, and doubtless they were suitably stricken, too. Well, there was a fine babble and cries of wonder and inquiry, I can tell you. They were certainly surprised to see me, even if they weren't exactly overjoyed. Of course, it was a difficult situation for them. Heroes are so much less of a nuisance when they're dead. There was even a hint of resentment, I thought, in the questions they poured at me. How had I escaped? Where had I come from? I swear Sapton was on the brink of demanding what the devil I meant by it. I answered fairly offhand, describing the plumbing system of Jotunberg briefly, and how I'd escaped from the lake. Grundvig and the prince agreed it was a marvel. Sapton recovered his pipe and stuffed it with tobacco. "And so," says I in conclusion, "I came back to offer my further services, if they are needed." And I laid my sabre gently on the table and stood back. "This chap Irving has nothing on me." There was an awkward, very long silence. Sapton puffed. He wasn't going to break it. Grundvig fidgeted. And then the prince, who'd been frowning at the table, looked up. "God, he was like me." "Sir," says he slowly, "these gentlemen have been telling me what has happened in Strakhan's of late. It defies understanding. Mine, at least. It seems you have been party to the most dastardly deception, the strangest plot I ever heard of. Yet it seems it was against your will. Is this not so?" He looked at the others, and Grundvig nodded and looked bewildered. "Perhaps I am not clear in my mind," the prince went on. "After all this..." And he gestured about him like a man in a fog. "But at least I have the evidence of my eyes. Whoever you are, whatever the reasons for what you did..." He broke off at a loss and then pulled himself together. "You saved my life tonight, sir. That much I know. If there has been wrong on your side, well, that is for your soul. But it has been cancelled out, for me at least." He looked at the others, Grundvig still nodding, Sapton puffing grimly and staring at his boots. Then Carl Gustav stood up and held out his hand. I took it, very manly, and we shook and looked each other in the eye. It was not canny, that resemblance, and I know he felt the same eeriness as I did, for his hand fell away. "Indeed, I think I am in your debt," says he, a little shaky. "If there is anything I can do, I don't know." "Well, to tell the truth, I hadn't been thinking of rewards, but he seemed to be hinting at something. However, I knew the best policy was to shut up, so I simply waited, as another uncomfortable silence fell. But this time it was Sapton who broke it. "There's no question of debt," says he deliberately. "Mr. Arnold may be said to have made amends. He's lucky to go off with his life." But at this, Grundvig and the prince cried out. "At least we owe him civility," says the prince. "Mr. Arnold, you have had my thanks. Understand it is the thanks of Strakhans and Denmark also."
"Aye, very fine," sneers Sapton. "But with your highness's leave, a clear passage to our frontier is the most, I think, that Mr. Arnold will expect."
He was pretty angry, all right. I began to understand that if Carl Gustav hadn't survived, it would have been waltzing Matilda for Flashy if Sapton had had his way. I didn't think it politic to mention his promise on behalf of little golden-headed Amelia. The less said about her, the better.
"At least he must be allowed to rest first," says the prince, "and then conveyed in safety to the border. We owe him that."
"He can't stay here," croaked Sapton. "In God's name, look at his face. We'll have difficulty preventing a scandal as it is. If there are two men with the prince's figurehead in the state, we'll never keep it quiet.